Well, here we are. At least some of you are going to live. Well, now, this is the 26th of April, AD 12, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. Well, anybody got a bulletin on prep checking? Give me a bulletin on prep checking, Herbie. All right. I'll say a few words while that's transpiring on something that you should find very important. This is just a very little short lecture, all in 3 seconds. I found one. All right. Thank you. This is it. All right. I'd like to comment on something. There are several things that monitor the success of auditing. And one of them is something which has remained more or less understood amongst us. And that is a professional attitude. The reason healing professions, even when they couldn't heal, have survived is centered around that one fact, a professional attitude. And the substance of a professional attitude is it doesn't matter whether a man is red or black or white, or whether he's a Democrat or a communist or a Republican, or belongs to the I Will Arise Church or is an atheist, or whether he's a friend or an enemy. That doesn't matter. A professional attitude requires from a practitioner that he is a professional. He is healing. And his attitude toward healing is there is a being and he heals him or her. And that is all there is to it. A good professional attitude simply betokens the fact that somebody is in need of healing and somebody is healed. And there are no additives. This is a very hard-boiled professional attitude, actually. And it can possibly get you into trouble when you yourself have caused the injury because it'll do a tone curve on you. You see, you hate the man and then you come down to evident propitiation because you're now healing him. What's one of the things that gets this attitude in trouble? But an auditor is as good as he can assume a professional attitude toward the PC he is auditing. It does not matter whether that PC has overts against him or withholds from him or if there is any personal equation of any kind whatsoever here. That has nothing to do with the auditing session. The auditor is a professional and he applies his profession to that individual. Regardless of that individual's condition, opinion, race, color, creed, anything else. Now, let me call to your attention that that fact alone has brought healing professions through the trillennia. They didn't even have to be able to heal. Witness the doctor today. That poor sod, man, he doesn't know a bacteria from a bacterial, you know. He's got camels and bugs. He wouldn't know which, you know. He's just adrift. He comes in with penicillin, sulfa won't cure it, he's had it. He sets bones and breaks them again, and he doesn't know what he's doing. The amount of brutality and psychic trauma which he causes in the process of his healing should alone actually require that he be hanged. In the field of psychiatry, it isn't a medical or healing practice at all. It's a practice of mayhem, pure and simple. It's a practice of mayhem and incompetence combined. It's not even competent mayhem. The psychiatrist is far more prone than the medical doctor to depart from the professional attitude of the healer. Far, far more prone, because he himself is less mentally stable, because he's fake. He is pretending to be able to do something about something, and he hasn't a clue. And the medical doctor can tie up a finger, but the psychiatrist can't tie up a trauma, that's for sure. All he can do is create them. And yet, these professions are respected. Why are they respected? There are many suborders of healing. There are many splinter groups of healing that if they ever amalgamated unto them one group and laid down a code, professional practice would get a long way, but they don't seem to be able to do that. And these groups are far less professional. But many of them have healing methods which are superior to those of the medical doctor, but they are not respected. Well, that hasn't anything to do with the old school tie. It's just they are not that professional. What do you mean professional? Well, they fall from grace all too often. They take personal attitudes toward this and that. They sometimes take advantage of their position. And they are not generally as trusted, oddly enough. That's not any condemnation of any of these groups particularly, but I just tell you from the ground up that they have not built this one thing into the public consciousness, that there is a professional attitude. The public cannot send them their fellow public to them with a completely free heart. There is liable to be some personal attitude in this. Certainly this is true of psychiatry. I mean, that's not one of the minor groups, but that's certainly very true of psychiatry. A husband cannot send his wife there and expect the home to be served, if you get what I read between the lines, you see. There's liable to be personal interests or personal conflicts develop under the guise of professional application. We are very young, we are very new, and we point out to you that there is one blunderbuss that has blazed a wide open path for all healing activities, whether they're Asclepians or British Medical Association people. And that was a professional attitude. They stuck very hard by this professional attitude. They made a lot of noise about it. And they stayed by it. So that you find on a field of battle, in North Africa, you find the British doctors and the German doctors after a tank battle equally treating British and German wounded. They all mixed up. Their professional attitude protected them. Now that is something you could well acquire. But it is far deeper than this. This is the reason husband and wife team doesn't work. They don't work well. Oh, they work. You can get something done. But they don't work well. Because the husband has too much of a vested interest in the mental condition, attitudes, and so forth of the wife. And the wife has too much of a personal interest in the attitudes and actions of a husband. There is too much personal concern. There is far too much pitch on the processing session. The husband processes the wife to get her over some things which he as a husband objects to, and vice versa. And they will very often stand squarely in the road of each other's progress if they are covertly mad at each other. There's too much personal attitude, too little professional attitude. Therefore, husband-wife teams have a hard time of it. The wife tends to Q&A, or the husband will tend to Q&A with this, or slant the processing in some particular direction, and all of a sudden, is always the husband is always objected to his wife's cold feet, you see. And this is what they'll do. They start running down the list, and it's got cold feet on it. And the husband, by calling it out, will wait it. And the wife, by feeling guilty about it, will wait it. And you all of a sudden get a wrong item. Had nothing to do with the case. And then because they're so sure, they won't check it out. See? They know it fits. See? That's the personal attitude entering into a professional activity. This boy is processing this girl in order to go to bed with her. Now, I myself have been going around with girls and when I was a boy, and with boys when I was a girl for some trillennia, and I never had to use processing to accomplish this particular end goal. I've sometimes had to use hospitals to cure myself of the gunshot or dart wounds that or something like that, but we never needed processing in order to accomplish the fact. You see, we've sometimes had to remedy the consequences of the act, but never the reverse. Personal curve, personal onus. Now, there are auditors around HGC sometimes that the DFP can never trust to audit a young man. Well, not because any sexual activity takes place, just because all you have to do is put this auditor sitting there confronting this young man, he goes mad. He cuts him to ribbons. ARC breaks all over the place and so forth. They very carefully never let this auditor process a young man. He might be an old man or something like that. He just can't do it. See? Some other auditor, we don't let dare let this auditor process an old lady. Cut her to ribbons. You know, won't put up with anything. Well, you say there's case entering. Now, there's more than case entering. There's personal like, personal dislike. And it just hasn't anything to do with auditing. There sits a person to be audited. There doesn't sit a young boy or an old lady or anything else. There's just somebody to be audited. You find out that as soon as you train yourself into that attitude exclusively with regard to PCs, you all of a sudden start to produce tremendous wins. Because the funny part of it is Judy O'Grady, the colonel's lady, young boys and old ladies, they're always the same under the skin. See, that's a case is a case. And that's all you can say about it. And that's very important to know. And the Scientologist is now coming of age, not that he is particularly a professional on whom the world is leaning, but nevertheless is long enough on the road now to lay that one in hard and to handle that factor, because failure to do so will get in the road of your processing results. Just for that reason alone. And then push it home and try to keep it up as far as the public view is concerned. Stand by that one, and you will immediately inherit the whole world of healing. See, where many splinter groups have not, you will, providing you have a professional attitude. That doesn't particularly mean professional appearance. You know, that doesn't mean a mock-up of some kind or another. It just means that this fellow is in need of processing, and whether he's red, blue, green, or white, it doesn't matter, a Republican, an atheist, even a psychiatrist. If he's sitting there, he needs processing. You've got enough answers now that you can process him. You can process him, you see, directly. There's no special treatment needed. And you just sit down and you process him. All of a sudden you will find that you have a very relaxed frame of mind, because this too can become a familiar thing to do and a familiar attitude to wear, that of just strictly a professional attitude. That's all a professional attitude consists of. Now, don't try to swell it up to a bunch of other things. It's just whether or not, when you sit down to process somebody, you are capable of expressing a totally professional, wholly uncolored attitude toward the PC. So that your attitude toward the PC does not partake in any way of your personal penchants. It isn't that you have to withhold your personal penchants. It's just the fact that you just process the PC. We don't even process him because, you see, you never process anybody because, you just process somebody. You see how easily we can put additives onto this thing. We process him because. We process him in order to. And all of that. No, just process him. You all of a sudden will find your winds go up on a steep climb. And if that is broad and well handled by Scientologists, you'll find that all by itself, being the sole tool and weapon of older healing societies and so forth, will bulldoze a wide channel through the public to such a degree that you are the only people they trust. And that is all that trust amounts to professionally. The public doesn't even demand results. They just demand that they could trust the fellow to take a professional interest in the patient. That is all. How many of you have gone to an oculist or an ophthalmologist and had this ophthalmologist then try to sell you glasses? It's almost impossible to go to an oculist without and get your eyes tested without them shoving glasses down your throat. Okay? Well, he's got some kind of a professional pitch right at that moment. You may have had this experience. And right at that moment, you feel all is not well. This man has a vested interest in you wearing glasses. And at that moment, you cease to trust him. Okay? He cannot maintain his professional attitude to the degree that if you need glasses, he will give you glasses. If you don't need glasses, he won't give you glasses. See, he never reads the meter, you see, on the lenses as to whether or not you've got sufficient aberration to need glasses or not need glasses, see. He looks in the till and finds out if he needs some money for a pair of glasses. You see that? And the public doesn't trust them. That's all. It's just, it's processing without a pitch. Yes, there are commercial arrangements in processing. Those take place before and very well may take place after, but they have nothing to do with the session. I did make a test one time. I may have had to get a man to recover from his aberrations concerning money before he would get well, because processing, he thought, was too costly. You see, and because he thought the processing was too costly, then he couldn't get well because he couldn't afford it. It was very, very remarkable. It was a test case. Usually it has very little to do with it. Somebody isn't paying something for your processing, they don't consider it worthwhile. That sort of thing has very little to do with it. See, that's something that takes place before, something takes place afterwards. But during that session, it is nothing but a session. The professional attitude is to make sure that it's nothing but a session. And then if you're very good, you can put on a professional hat before the session, run a session, and then put on a livingness hat and not go on being an auditor after the session. You find people will appreciate this, too. Because you're going on looking like an auditor after the session sort of puts the PC back in the session. Sometimes a good thing to swat them between the shoulder blades or something like that, you know. Anything. Just don't act like an auditor after a session. Act like an auditor during a session. See, there's all kinds of additives you can put onto this thing. If you're going to get people to recover from aberration, if you're going to handle PCs, if you're going to handle ARC breaks, you mustn't have opinions and curves about the case before they are demonstrated in auditing. See, you mustn't have items selected before the item occurs. You get the idea? I mean, you're auditing that case. And then do a very reliable job of auditing. Never pretend that you've seen something or read something that you haven't seen or read on that case, you see. Never give him an item because he expected an item. Give him an item only because it checks out. See? You do a professional job, do a very good technical job, and you're always all right. Now, we've arrived at a level where a technical job today is marvelous. A person who can do good model session, good TRs, and so on, is marvelous. One could never complain about this at all. A person is doing a good model session, reading the E-meter well, TRs are in good shape, and he sits there and just gives the session and goes straight through with what he's supposed to do. Man, that PC is impressed. Wow! It's the most impressive thing you can do. Is to be technically letter perfect today. Now, pep checking is the first moment that you really collide with an auditor, whether in training or early activities as an auditor, really collides with whether he knows his business or not. And prep checking is harder to do than routine three-type processes. To do an accurate job of prep checking and to get good results with prep checking is infinitely more difficult than to do a routine three job. But oddly enough, if you can't do a prep checking job, you will never do a routine three job. There'll always be something missing. Prep checking is that skill which keeps the PC in session and which frees up the attention of the PC so that he can be audited. It also transcends this by making enormous differences in the health and presence of the PC. Make enormous differences if it's done right and done well. But we're not really demanding that on it. We're only demanding of prep checking that it sets somebody up to be in session and be able to stay in session without having a tremendous number of present time problems and withholds and all the rest of it. Now, the facts of the case are that prep checking today is possible of transcending every result ever dreamed of by Sigmund Freud in a tiny fraction of the number of hours dreamed up by Sigmund Freud. It actually completes the work of any personal catharsis type therapy, whether that's clinical psychology or anything else. I was just reading in a clipping somebody sent me. I get lots of clippings and I appreciate them. And this clipping was very amusing. It's a long dissertation on somebody from the University of Florida or New Mexico or Northern North Pole or some place on the subject of this will kill you. It's on the subject of making the person create the difficulty he has. And they get him to create, if the man is afraid of dying, they get him to imagine and create the idea of dying. And when he can do this enough, this is, of course, your Johnny-come-lately psychologist who is desperate. His university has said, "Good God, Higginbottom, you've never, never, never turned in a paper. Do you realize that? You've brought no credit to the university. We expect all of our professors to turn out learned papers. They've got to turn out learned papers at least every 3 months. And you never turn one out, Higginbottom. And haven't any publicity. The football team's losing everything this year. Why don't you turn out something on psychology?" And so he goes over and picks up some book on Dynex Scientology, sizes it, and puts this thing out in the public press, you see, and turns out a monocatharsis or something that he thinks will get him, and they give him his gold star, you know, and Higginbottom has still got a job. That's how they do these things in universities. You think I'm kidding? Those poor illegitimate sons are always in trouble. They haven't turned out enough papers. They've gotten so buggy on the subject that you're a scientist if you've turned out papers. You know, I'm never quite sure what kind of paper it's supposed to be. Some of you got that. And look at this poor sod. He's got a whole bunch of bright-eyed students sitting down there in Florida or the North Pole or wherever this silly university is. And he's running creative processing on them. And he hasn't found out anything about creative processing. He doesn't know what he's going to run into. He didn't bother to read the next book, you know. Step six phenomena, here we come. You know? Miles. But, you see, these birds are monkeying. These birds are monkeying around. He doesn't know anywhere near as much about it as we did on at the time. He didn't know anything about engrams or facsimiles. He knows nothing about what the person's liable to get into. This person got stuck in a picture. He'd never even be able to tell him to go to the end of it or come up to present time or anything, because turn a kid loose with a .45 and say, cut your teeth on it, sonny. Here, I'll get it at full cock for you. It's about that sensible. These birds are going off and riding off in all directions, trying desperately to achieve something. And it's been achieved, and you mustn't overlook the fact that it has been achieved. Prep checking. Prep checking is a rounded-off activity. I'm never going to look at it again. Just do it. It's a nice rounded-off activity, a very smooth activity. It's not something that's going to shift, nor anybody's going to change it, because I know exactly what its ceiling is. The ceiling is a total psychotherapy of this lifetime. It's a total psychotherapy of this lifetime. You can make it go back into former lives, and you can make it do other things, but you actually have exceeded the purpose and limit of prep checking, because the PC has got so many hundreds of thousands of other lives that take you a little too long by this process to do something about them. So its practical limits are the limits of this lifetime. And it winds up the work of Freud, Jung, Adler, any clinical psychology, Hopes, or anything like that. You should be able to do this. Because if you ever set up, let's say that you got all of a sudden a Saudi Arabian oil company came along and wanted you to be a part of their team for Lower Kingville or something, and they were going to have all of their people set up, and you were supposed to go through some motions of some kind or another that was something like the practice of psychology, what they'd recognize, as psychotherapy and so on. This is all you'd have to do. I mean, just prep check people. They'd all be very happy with you, providing you did a good professional job of it. You could sit down there and do a good professional job of prep checking, and you'd pull everything this guy was really thought he was worried about. It'd all straighten out. The fellow would feel nice. Everything would be smooth. The funny part of it is that it does. It accomplishes more than man ever hoped of psychotherapy. See, there's more here than has ever been hoped for in the field of psychotherapy. It was a junior process as far as we're concerned. But it is very comprehensible to the world at large. And they're scientific, They've read the papers of Freud and this and that, and they know which direction psychotherapy is supposed to go. And this, oddly enough, covers the direction psychotherapy is supposed to go. You sit there, and you're supposed to pull up the traumatic experiences of the person. Of course, the traumatic experience of these people are just locks. You're not running engrams or anything serious like that. They don't know anything about engrams. You say, well, you've been having trouble with your wife, you see. All right, let's see. Take that up. Very good. Very good. Look it over. Get some kind of a zero that fits in here someplace. And have you ever done anything to your wife? Or have you ever had any trouble with your wife? He'd buy that very well, you see. And you start fishing around to find out what he's done to his wife, don't you see? And you eventually get your incident, and you work it with your withhold system, and, you've got your what question gives you chain. Work it, give you withhold system, go over this thing, finally recover the lowest dregs of it all, and get it on up to PT, and all cleaned up, slick as whiskey. He won't have anywhere near the trouble with his wife that he used to have. You could also do orientation with this sort of thing, People having a hard time working for the company, they're considered valuable in some respects, but they're a liability in others. Well, you could pick up what this is and straighten it up with prep checking rather rapidly, a few hours. And it looks very professional. You sit there and drag over what they laughingly call a psyche. If they only knew what lay below what they think the unconscious mind is, If they had any idea, they wouldn't go puttering around that swamp. They'd run like a bunch of startled cottontails, that had just seen a snake. But you can take all the froth off the top of the swamp and the bubbles and so forth, and as long as you don't show the guy that it's just black from there on down, you see? Why? Everybody's very happy with this thing. And it's a process, activity, that you really don't expect to pull the PC's toenails with right up through his gullet. You don't expect it to do this, you know? Maybe polish up his teeth or get the fur off his tongue, you see. That's about it. That's what you expect of the process. Now, if you expect too much of prep checking, why, of course, you're going to be rather upset here and there. This fellow is a total arthritic. He's in horrible condition. He can't walk. He can't sleep. He's on his deathbed, and you walk in, you start to prep check him, and he dies. And he's still so curled up, they can't even get him in a standard coffin. They have to build another kind. Corkscrew-type coffin in order to get him in there. So you'd be very happy with prep checking. You'd be very happy with prep checking if you didn't expect too much prep checking. Well, what the public expects of psychotherapy, prep checking more than delivers. And what you expect of it is very simple. You just want it to get this PC in some kind of shape so he'll sit in session without getting his rudiments wildly out. So that you can handle his rudiments. And you can do a process that does pull his toenails. And you get a person prep checked up to the point where the rudiments will stay in. Well, of course, he's had to tell you most of his basic withholds that he'd sit there dodging with. And you'll have pulled quite a few somatics. They won't get in the road of your listing. And he'll come into session. You'll get a few missed withholds if you're on an offline. You have a little trouble. I mean, if you're pushing around on some line that is a rugged line to the PC because some other line earlier than that is out, is there something basically in error with the routine three activity, you'll always have a little trouble keeping things in. But it'll be minor. It'll be picking up last night's withhold, you know. And at the beginning of the session, you know, these little things, the missed withhold, the thing he didn't find out about, and all of a sudden the thing settles out. You can handle the PC because you can keep it all picked up, because you're not trying to pick up everything in this lifetime while you're doing 3D crisscross. Now, the basic thing that has been wrong with routine three processes is because the auditor, in doing a routine three session, was also always trying to do a set check or a rudiment session. He was trying to cross two breeds of cat. And it was something on the order of trying to mate an eagle, you know, with a shark. And you just couldn't get them to recognize each other's sex appeal. Here, on the one hand, you see, you're supposed to be listing, and the PC is sitting there, and he really is, he's all ready to go, man, go, you know, he's all ready to make that list, you know, he's getting interested in all this, and he's ready to, you know, and so forth, and you read this thing, and he's got a present time problem, and he missed withholds, and so forth, and any time you say anything, the E-meter almost jumps off the pin by the impact of your voice, don't you see, and you start to list, and you say, well, maybe it'll get all right. Then all of a sudden he goes out like a light, and you say, I missed a withhold on you, which is what you should say, to pick him out of his boil off and so forth. Well, yeah, you missed a withhold on me. Well, let's see. While I was waiting to pick up this body, I thought that my father was an ugly man. You say, all right, that was good. And have I missed a withhold on you? Well, I never told you, actually, but that's too embarrassing. What the hell kind of a session are we doing now, see? Well, we're doing a cross between an eagle and a shark, and he can't live in the sea, and he can't live in the sky. And if an ornithologist ever saw him, why, he'd have a hell of a time. You'd be surprised. That's the commonest error in doing the routine three processes. is that you start in to do a routine three process and you wind up doing a rudiment session. Now, that accounts for most of the breakdown. And this also accounts for the fact that people couldn't find goals. That's going to get very important to you very shortly, so you better know all about this. They couldn't find goals because rudiments were out. Well, you can't do a goals-finding session while you're doing a sect-checking session and a prep-checking session and so forth. You see, it's all crossed up. You can always tell a green auditor here that hasn't nowadays. You can always tell one because you send them up to do a routine three session, and they come down and they hand you a rudiment session. He spent the whole session trying to get the rudiments in. You send him up again to do a routine three session, and they always come back and give you a rudiment. And a damn little routine three ever gets done. Because, of course, the whole ruddy lot is wound up in a out rudiments. See, they start to do one kind of session, they get another kind of session. It gives the auditor at once the idea that he has no control of the PC. And his sessioning sort of collapses at this point, you see. He's all set to charge in there and get the list. The PC's all set to charge in there and get the list, except the rudiments have busted the needle. PC shouldn't be doing a routine three type of a session, that's all. Should be doing a prep checking session. So you don't cross the eagle and the shark. You reach into the Stygian depths and you get yourself a prep check session going, and you pull the withholds and things like that necessary so that the PC can be comfortable being audited and always isn't sitting there with a pair of boxing gloves on to defend his favorite misdemeanors, you know. You get that straightened out, you're giving him CCHs at the same time. Why, you're getting PC good under good control, getting his havingness so it's straightened out and so forth. You're getting withholds pulled, you're just grooving him in. And with prep checking, of course, you're already grooving him in to being model sessioned. He's getting used to being audited without being thrown for a loop, see? And he eventually gets his prediction up on this thing and he can stay more alert in the session and so on. So prep checking is vital. I don't care whether it produces a result beyond simply getting the PC to stay in session. I just couldn't care less. Anything that you get beyond that is a terrific bonus. It's remarkable if you get these bonuses quite routinely if you're a good prep checker. You just keep getting bonuses, 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 but all you want is just get the PC so they'll stay in session. That's all. So every time a stray thought hits him from some place or another, you don't have 16 rudiments go out. In view of the fact there aren't 16 rudiments, it makes it very difficult, you see. It's hard to get in 16 when you only got a few, you know. The difficulties which you encounter in routine three are adequate and sufficient unto themselves without adding the difficulties of prep checking. So if you get all of these, it's somewhat like trying to play a barrel organ, some bagpipes, and so forth, while on roller skates on some slippery ice. It's embarrassing. You just haven't got that many hands and ears. You begin to consider that auditing is terribly difficult. Very difficult to do. Well, yeah, well, of course you're doing an impossible job when you're trying to prep check while doing routine three. Now, the whole reason why routine three got varied and moved around is because the rudiments kept going out on people and they weren't able to find items. They couldn't keep rudiments in. Here you find prep checking. And that is the remedy to those difficulties that were encountered heretofore in clearing. These prep checking activities will set your PC up so that when you get a list, you are getting a list, not getting a bunch of worries about whether or not you'll encounter his withholds. Okay? You're going to get a list. You're going to get a chance to do some routine three. Then you can find goals, find terminals, find items, find op terms. All this becomes easy because you've already set the case up so the case can be audited. So don't skimp this. Terribly important. You're very lucky in that this is designed also to be very interesting to the patient. You see, he's like the hypnotized bird when he gets it. And he sits there in great insouciance, you know. He's going to sit there with his rudiments all out, defending himself promptly and auditing and so forth. You sit down, you open up on him with prep checking. You say, all right, are you willing to talk to me about your difficulties? That's your zero question. Have you been willing to talk to auditors, or have you been willing to talk to people about your difficulties? Any kind of a way that you want to vary this particular zero to get, are you willing to talk to me about your difficulties? We don't care how you state the zero. It's got to be something that's real, little PC. Of course. Absolutely. Quang. You say, what's that? What aren't you willing to talk to me about? So forth, a little boswas in the discussion here of one kind or another, and he turns kind of a beet red. And believe me, at that point he starts getting interested. You eventually get a withhold off of him of some kind or another. Are you out of that withhold? Why, you're in business. You got a withhold. You bang it into a what question, it'll give you a chain. He thought he could get away with just telling you about Mary Bell. And imagine his surprise when he has to tell you about. Eventually he gets over these pieces of nonsense, and after that he isn't in this dodgy state. He can actually sit there and be a PC. Without prep checking, we had a hell of a time. Don't mind telling you, it was rough all the way. So prep checking is very well worth learning. Now let's take up prep checking from the viewpoint of auditor training. Routine 3 processes are too hard on a case to be done wrong. You cannot do a training activity safely with a routine 3 process. Can't be done. You cannot set somebody to learn how to run an e-meter while he is trying to find somebody's opter. That would be pretty grim. And some of you have seen this. We've set somebody out to find somebody's goal when they couldn't yet run an e-meter, sit in session, nothing. And man, that doesn't get to be a picnic. That makes the Roman arena, you say, oh, look like a Sunday school picnic. It's gruesome, absolutely gruesome, and they wind up with a mess. So you mustn't use routine 3 or class 3 processes as training processes, even though in the final analysis they are easier to do than prep checking. You must continue to use prep checking as a training process, even though prep checking has a tremendous liability. You can blow somebody right out of Scientology with bad prep checking. Oh, with dynamite. But you won't kill him. It's dynamite. All you got to do is miss a withhold, and you've had it. On some cases, when they're still in their early, edgy states, just miss a withhold. Or, God help you, get a case where they're walking around with an everybody knows all the time. You know, this is the Thede Weedy case. That's what distinguishes the Thede Weedy case. Everybody knows all the time. They run around, it's on a standard, total, everybody should know. And the missed withholds you pick up off of them is when you ask them a question. Anytime you, the auditor, ask them a question, then you should know, so of course you have missed a withhold. So we have, let us say, 3 auditing questions in a minute. We have then missed 3 withholds in a minute. I think this is very well worth looking at. You see somebody's graph crushed right straight across the top, and the case is a perpetual missed withhold case. Somebody walks up to him and says, what time is it, Joe? See? Everybody should know, you see. And he has now found out that you don't know what time it is, but he knows what time it is, so you should know what he should know, so therefore you missed a withhold on him, and he gets quite cross with you. Doesn't tell you the time either. Do you understand that phenomenon? The person has the idea that everybody else should know anything they're thinking. When you get that combination, man, you've had it. The only thing that'll crack a case like that, something like prep checking. You run into this sooner or later. You can break this down. You notice everything is reacting. Of course, what you really do is clip it out with a routine 3 process. Eventually, so why it's swami or something, you know, it'll come up as an item, and after that, the circuit ceases. But not until then. But you can take the edge of it off with prep checking. But they are hell to prep check. You practically have to sit on their chest and box their ears to get an answer to anything because they're sitting there. What are you asking them questions for? Because you know it, you see. You must know because they know. That's good enough. They know. So they don't have any withholds. So they have never done anything. You get desperate with a case like that unless you know there can be cases like that and what the common denominator of that case is, which is everybody else should know what they know. They've got it to a psychotic extent. So you sit there and they eventually break it down and you suddenly realize, have I missed a withhold on you? And you've always missed them by the ton. You find out what withhold has been missed. You ask them a question. All right. So you just start cleaning up a chain called questions they have been asked. Okay? Or questions they have had to ask, since this put it all to shame. You eventually will plow in on this thing one way or the other, and you'll find the case will start straightening up. They're the hardest cases in the world to prep check. Now, that's the rough case to prep check, not the sinner. Not the fellow who has done a great many antisocial things. This change your sights. It's the good people who are hard to prep check. They're tough. And nobody says that prep checking is an easy thing to do. I wouldn't try to sell you this for a minute. You got to be able to develop your sensitivity for recognizing a case for what it is, getting a proper zero question in there, getting a zero A question that hits the case right where it lives, and then you've got to develop the facility of yibble-yabbling around, finally, until the case actually owns up to a withhold of some kind, another, an overt of some kind, around which you can build a what question. Use that what question, use your withhold system, clean up the chain. And there's a lot of disappointments in the line. You get this, you say, oh, God, he burned down a church. Fine, well, we really got something here, you know. And it just sits there. It just sits there at 2.4. And you go through the whole chain. Not only one church, but just dozens of churches. And it sits there at 2.4. You get a needle knock on it, but the tone arm never moves. You're not doing a thing for the case. And then you eventually, accidentally, find out that he gets a bad fall on buying all-day suckers. And he finally, after much embarrassment and twisting in his chair, owns up to having purchased one that very morning. And it's what all-day sucker have you purchased? That is your zero question, and you get tone arm motion from 2 to 4.5. Those are overts. You finally get down to the fact that every time a kid in the neighborhood would buy an all-day sucker, he would sit down on him and beat the living daylights out of him until they gave it up. And maybe kill somebody doing it. And it got associated this way, and finally he all of a sudden triggers this. You get the basis of it. You pull at the big unknown strip of it that he never has known, comes to light. Your tone arm motions quiets down up to present time. Man, have you really done something for him? Now he knows you're a wizard. Because that's one of his terminals, too, that he'll learn later on. But there is what you expect. You prep check. Nobody's trying to tell you prep checking is easy. But prep checking is precise. And prep checking, more than anything else, has to be done in a very professional way. Because your differences of expression, your expression yes. Your personal reaction on the thing and your personal interest on the thing interjected into the session, your shockedness, your forbiddenness, all of these things coming up, just wreck prep checking. Just psh, it's gone. You won't get any others. PC will sit there, and this is so prevalent that it causes a PC only to get off little tiny featherweight overs. And then lie like mad, he tells you he feels so much better having gotten over the fact that he dropped a pin that morning. Now, that's totally traceable to the auditor's non-professional attitude while auditing. If you expect to get overts off a case, you're going to have to be very professional in your handling of it. If you're very professional in the handling of it, you're not trying to make the PC guilty, you haven't got lots of greed to hear more of this solicity. And you've got it made. And your PC will just sit there and he'll just get more and more stuff off, more and more stuff off, more and more stuff off. Sometimes he even will get into a contest to see if he can shock you. By the time he finds out that he can't, he will have gotten rid of all of his withhold. He doesn't care for it. But the training crucible of the auditor would be prep checking. It's a more difficult skill than routine three to really get results with prep checking. Its topmost limits is to be able to get the PC in session and keep him in session. It gives you far more bonus than that. It will do remarkable and wonderful things for cases, far in excess of any psychotherapy that's ever been known here on earth. That makes it fine. It's doing a terrific thing from PC's point of view. Actually, what are you doing? You're clearing up one grain of sand off the rock of Gibraltar of grains of sand. One lifetime is about all you're cleaning up. Nothing wrong with him this lifetime. He's alive and sane. That's better than he's been for millennia. But he gets a grip on being a PC. He gets so he can talk to an auditor. His rudiments stay in, and then eventually he is now gets courageous enough that he can embark upon more difficult journeys across far rougher seas. That's the value of this. So this is the make-break point of the auditor. The training emphasis should be on whether or not an auditor can do good prep checking. There's the liability of the auditor missing withholds. That's the main liability. Missed withholds, not withholds. You can miss a withhold on the PC by not asking for it, and the PC doesn't know about it. Well, that isn't what we mean by missed withholds. It's what he feels you should have found out. That is a missed withhold. He sits there, and all of a sudden he realizes that you should have found out about something. You haven't found out about it. And out of session he goes, and he's mad at you, and he's all upset. And if you're an expert prep checker, all you have to do is say, what withhold have I missed on you? Find it and get it out of the road in a hurry. Very few auditors learn rapidly this interesting datum, that if the PC has an ARC break, or is upset, or is misemotional, or in any way, shape, or form is having trouble in the session, it stems from missed withholds. I mean, auditors have an awfulest time learning this. Honest, it's so evident that it's in neon signs all over the billboards, you know. All you have to do is do it once or twice, like magic. It's the most magical magic you ever cared to see. You know, here's this PC, and this PC is just about to tear strips off the ceiling. He's mad, he's sullen, he's going to blow session, everything else. And you say, have I missed a whiff? Oh, aren't you? And he says, well, yes, I guess you have. And he said, I don't know what it is. It's probably something or other. You say, you notice all of a sudden you've got to guide his attention in and give him a spotlight of attention. And he thinks about one thing or another. You say, well, that one there, yeah. And he says, oh, that, And all of a sudden, when he's back in session, he's being calm and nice and everything's fine. Damnedest exhibition you ever saw. All you have to do is time or two, get a subjective and objective reality on it. And after that, you'll never have any trouble with PCs. But do you know auditors have a hell of a time learning this at first? They'll think it's everything under God's green earth. They'll say, have you got an ARC break with me? You know? All right. Now, what have I done to you, and what have you done to me? And so forth, and try to smooth it all out. What responsibility haven't you taken for this session, you know? Anything I could think of, and they get all nerved up, and the PC's getting nerved up, and everybody's going unhappy, and chairs are breaking, finally. 2 days before, you told this auditor, now look, if a PC gets upset, it's because you've missed a withhold on the PC. Just ask him, what withhold have I missed? The day before this session occurred, you said to the auditor, now look, if the PC gets upset on you, all you have to do is ask the PC, what withhold have I missed on you? And yet at that time, when the PC gets upset, he'll say, do you have an ARC break? We'll see, what responsibility haven't your grandmother taken for this session? Honest, he looks like a fighter plane crashing into everything in sight. Down in flames, man. Quite remarkable. So there's evidently, it's sometimes tough to learn prep checking. It's tough to get in there, to probe deeply, to really scrape up the muck on the PC and get him to talk to you and so on. It's a terrific test of an auditor, whether or not he can prep check. Terrific test. An auditor can prep check well. Marvelous. He can do anything. He can do anything from there on. And of course, a PC who has been well prep checked runs routine 3 processes just like that. Nothing to it. They have no trouble with them at all. PC is not prep checked. Auditor can't prep check. Auditor runs routine 3 type process. Auditor sees PC going into spin. Auditor goes into spin. PC goes into spin. Floor falls in. The ceiling falls in. You see these lumps of charcoal years afterward, and you wonder what happened. They've become their own goals problem masses. It's murderous. So although routine 3 looks very easy, and the motions of it are very easy, and it's very easy to do. Remember, it's only very easy to do if you're an expert in handling a meter, an expert in handling a PC, and you can take it all like a breeze. And you know how to set a session back together again. Bang, you keep the rudiments in. Bang, there's nothing to this. You just handle the whole thing. Of course you can do routine 3. Therefore, after that, routine 3 will look very simple to you. And you look at student auditors and you say, well, why can't I teach them routine 3? You see, it's just so simple. There's nothing to it. I can do it. And all of a sudden, why, one day you're passing the classroom where they're sitting in there co-auditing and you see this little trickle of blood coming out. You go in and the place is full of smoke. And all there is some few charred chairs. And you say, well, what possibly could have gone wrong? I prep check easily. I run 3D crisscross easily. PCs are very easy to audit. What could have happened? Well, what happened is you tried to get them to run 3D before they could do a perfect prep check. Anytime you do it, you'll have trouble thereafter. Prep checking demands far more of the auditor than routine 3 ever will. But oddly enough, you can never do routine 3 unless you can prep check. You see how that is? And it's perfectly safe, by the way, to teach people to prep check. Teach them to use a meter while prep checking. Perfectly safe. Because what they stir up, anybody can handle. You see some student bolting through the door madly. He's on his way to Arcturus or something. You grab hold of him and say, what was just happening? And he says, oh, it's terrible, that auditor's butchering me and so on. What withhold did he miss on you? Well, why don't you go in and tell him? You go back and sit down. Now that we have answers of that type in the handling of beings, we can afford to be a little heroic in this level of training. So I actually expect you to know prep checking and CCHs very well, because they establish sessions while getting terrific gains from the PC's point of view. And when you're teaching auditing, please teach CCHs and prep checking. And don't turn anybody loose on routine 3 type activities until you're absolutely certain that they're just a fine prep checker, and you'll never have any trouble. Okay? All right. Take a break.